Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from Fanball.com, here's the host for Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchian.
It is time for America's longest-running fantasy show, Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm your host, Paul Charchian. Fanball.com, my co-hosts are Christian Peterson and Brian Johnson. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, Charch, how are you?
Hello, friends.
I am doing well because it is week nine. It is, this is for many teams, this is sort of make or break. You're like a 3-win operation right now. You need this
You're
game.
In trouble.
You need this game. We're here for you.
The playoffs start for a lot of people.
In some ways, yeah. I mean, we're getting to that point of the season. Over the course of today, we're going to break down every game fantasy style. We give letter grades for every meaningful player, whole letter grades for every player, and the rationale for each whole letter grade, so you can decide whether or not you agree.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
No reason. We give you nine players upon whom you can take a chance later in the show. We'll answer three tough questions. We'll jump into our time machine. CP, have you heard our time machine yet?
Ooh, I have not.
Yeah, baby. We have upgraded from the Blammo time machine.
That's significantly better than Blammo.
Yeah, it is. And
it kind of turns into a little bit of like a Chicago Bulls basketball game right at the end.
You know, it kind of
that part's a little weird. But
this is
up until then, it was great.
Way off topic, but have you ever looked at the Bulls logo upside down?
Ah, yeah. What is it supposed to be? I heard this.
I don't know if I can say it on the radio. Just go look at a Bulls logo upside down.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I should have done that a while ago. From the time machine.
By the way, I like it.
If we can run the time machine, and we're going to go with the Bulls theme. If the time machine has to be related to the Bulls, let's make Michael Jordan a tight end. Let's plant the seed, Inception style, in his mind that he loves football and he should be a tight end. Michael Jordan could have been an awesome tight end in the NFL.
It would have been a lot more interesting than the whole baseball farce, right?
When
he got banned from the NBA.
When he got, banned from the NBA.
Yes.
That was definitely not gambling related.
Right.
Yeah, that ban. I remember that. Let's jump into the matchups, beginning with Tennessee taking on Carolina. Christian, this feels like a solid game for Derrick Henry to me. What do you think?
Yeah, a solid game for the running backs here. And really not much else on either side. Let's start with Derrick Henry. This projects as a big game for him. The Panthers allow 4.9 yards per carry. They've given up a league-leading 10 running back rushing scores. Just last week, the 49ers destroyed Carolina for 206 rushing yards, 5 total TDs. Derrick Henry gets an easy A grade here. Not so much for the passing game. Ryan Tannehill has actually been pretty good.
Five
touchdown passes and 2 starts, but Carolina knows how to stop the pass. They haven't let a QB throw for more than 2 touchdown passes all year. They've held 5 of 7 passers to 208 yards or less. I think you can find a better player and a better matchup than Tannehill, so I've got him on the bench. Same for Corey Davis and A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
It's tough to rely on either one of these guys. A couple weeks ago, it looked like Davis was going to emerge in Tannehill's first start, and then he laid an egg the last start.
Yeah, so, one catch last week.
Yeah, he's only topped 44 yards in 2 of his last 7 games. He just has to be on the bench. Same with A.J. Brown. His snap rate is still hovering in the 60 to 65% range, 27 or fewer yards in 5 of his last 7 games. The Panthers' secondary has given up some big games to 2 guys. DJ Chark, 164 yards and 2 touchdowns, and Chris Godwin twice went for over 120 yards, and they've shut everybody else down.
Yeah.
So there's just nothing here to make me think that Corey Davis or A.J. Brown are going to break out.
Panthers have got a nice 1-2 punch at cornerback they're developing in Bradbury and Cockrell as 2 really
emerging,
solid corners.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Jonnu Smith at tight end hopefully will not have to deal with either one of those guys. He led Tennessee in targets with 7 catches, 6 yards, 78 last week, and scored a touchdown. All with Delanie Walker sidelined. Walker is still likely out
week. In fact, officially out.
It's officially out. There we go. And the Panthers gave up 86 yards to George Kittle last week, 82 yards and a touchdown to Tampa's tight ends the week before that. So I gave a B grade to Jonnu Smith. Let's go to the Panthers side. Christian McCaffrey, an easy A starter here. The Titans are good against the run. They allow you less than 4 yards per carry, but it doesn't matter. McCaffrey's an A every week. The passing game, I've got Kyle Allen on the bench. Allen just can't be trusted. The matchup isn't horrible. Jameis Winston and Phillip Rivers have each topped 300 yards with 2 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks against the Titans, but I can't do it for Kyle Allen. Just 199 yards per game with 3 touchdowns since that great debut that he had in week 3. So he's on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Just enough here for a starting grade on DJ Moore. He has at least 8 targets in 3 straight games. With that kind of usage, I think you can start him against a secondary that just got torched for 198 yards and 2 touchdowns by Mike Evans last week. They could be missing one of their starting cornerbacks, Adoree Jackson, for the second straight week. So I've got a starting grade on DJ Moore. Not so much on Curtis Samuel, who may or may not play in this game. He's questionable. It sounds like they're saying they think he's going to play. He hasn't been good enough to justify the risk that he starts this game and doesn't finish it because of that injury. Tight end Greg Olsen, I've got on the bench. Again, he had a big outburst in week 3, but has done literally nothing since then. 8 catches for 70 yards in the last 4 games. He is on your bench.
All right, let's take a look at Indianapolis taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. No T.Y. Hilton this week and probably for a few weeks. What do you think of Jacoby Brissett, who quietly had been one of the most reliable fantasy producers at the quarterback position? But Brian, without T.Y. Hilton, you're taking the best receiver off the field.
Yeah, without a doubt. By a mile, T.Y. Hilton, the best receiver on the team. Let's talk about the guys behind him. Zach Pascal was the number 2 receiver when Hilton was healthy, it looked like.
Quasi number two.
Played in over 90% of the snaps last week following his 100-yard outing in week 7. Then, of course, there's Paris Campbell, Deion Kane. Yeah. It's a mess, though. I didn't like the matchup for Hilton. I was going to bench Pascal if Hilton played. I will give Pascal a C, but no opposing wide receiver has topped 80 yards against Pittsburgh since week 1. Only 3 wide receivers have topped 5 catches against the Steelers all season. Steven Nelson and the somewhat resurrected Iron Hayden of years past.
Yes.
Dust off the nickname, have only allowed 2 touchdowns.
Iron Hayden.
Although
Fitzpatrick went after him on the Monday night game and had some success throwing at Hayden.
He did. Albert Wilson did score a touchdown on Hayden, I believe. But again, I'm worried about all the receivers for the Colts. I'll give Pascal the C, but we got to see who rises between Deion Kane, Paris Campbell. Those guys, they're on the bench for me. Eric Ebron, and give him a C. Pittsburgh has surrendered some nice box scores to opposing tight end units. Seattle tight ends had 6 catches for 63 yards and 2 touchdowns. Basically, George Kittle had 6 for 57. Baltimore tight ends combined for 9 catches, 77 yards, and the Chargers tight ends combined for 9 catches, 115 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, C for Ebron. I was going to bench Jack Doyle, but now that T.Y. Hilton's out, Hilton has the 3rd most targets inside the 10-yard line this year.
Yeah.
That brings Doyle into play.
Doesn't it bring Ebron even more into play? He's always red zone guy.
Yeah, but he's just so bad, though. But yeah, he's in play. He's in play. But okay, I'll give them Ebron and Jack Doyle both whole hard C's.
All right, I like it. That's a definitive answer. Thank you.
Jacoby Brissett, going to give him a C, too. Since acquiring Minka Fitzpatrick, Pittsburgh has not allowed more than 2 passing touchdowns in a game, and 3 of the 5 quarterbacks they faced since acquiring Minka were held under 200 passing yards. So C for Brissett, and I was going to give him a C even with T.Y. Hilton playing, so
yeah,
it's not a great matchup for him. And Marlon Mack, very quickly, I'll give him a B, even though Pittsburgh has only allowed 1 rushing touchdown to a running back over their last 4 games, and no lone back has topped 62 rushing yards during that span. The Steelers are also holding running back to under 45 receiving yards per game, and that's really more of a concern for Nyheim Hines, not Mack. So Mack, not a great matchup for him, but the volume will be there, so he gets to the B. Who's probably not going to be there for Pittsburgh is James Conner, now listed as doubtful with the shoulder injury. Let's just assume he does not play. That would put Jalen Samuels in the starting role. He took all the first team reps at practice on Friday.
Right, and Benny Snell's not going either. So this could be, it could be a 100% game for Jalen Samuels.
And if you're in a deeper leagues and really hurting for running back, Trey Edmonds would be the ad, but that's very deep. But not a great matchup for Samuels. No lone opposing back has topped 90 rushing yards against the Colts this year, and they've only surrendered one running back touchdown over their last five games, and no lone back has topped 30 receiving yards or scored through the air since week one against the Colts. So just a C for Samuels, even though he should be the starter in this one. I'm going to give Juju a B. Volume has been a bit of an issue with Mason Rudolph at quarterback, but if Juju can see 7 to 8 targets, he should be in line for a very good game. Only 5 opposing wide receivers have seen 7 or more targets against Indy. And those were Keenan Allen, who had 8 for 123 and 1, Julio Jones, 8 for 128 and 1, Tyrell Williams, 3 for 36 and 1, Byron Pringle, 6 for 103 for 1,
yeah,
and DeAndre Hopkins for 9, 106 and 1. And there have also been 4 wide receivers who see 6 targets. 3 of those 4 hit at least 70 receiving yards. So that's probably your floor for Juju here, but there is a ceiling. Deontay Johnson, nice call last week, by the way, Charge.
Thank you.
Take a chance, my wide receiver.
All right.
Not playing the Dolphins this week, though. I got him on the bench in this matchup, but he should be rostered in most leagues. And Vance McDonald, he's been pretty bad.
Shockingly bad.
Since scoring twice in Rudolph's debut,
yeah,
just 10 targets over his last 4 games. But it's a good matchup, though. The Colts have allowed a 74% completion rate to tight ends. That's the 7th highest mark in the league. And that's led to a per-game average of 6 catches and 60 yards to the position. So I'll give McDonald a C, but if he doesn't get it done here, he's probably droppable. And Mason Rudolph, he's on the bench. The Colts have allowed 1 or 0 passing touchdowns in more than half their games. And Rudolph has failed to throw for more than 230 yards in any game this year.
The least interesting game of the weekend is Washington taking on Buffalo, and this won't take long. There's only one Washington Redskin you care about. That's Adrian Peterson. Under Bill Callahan, his usage has doubled. Doubled. And he's actually rewarded Callahan with 4.8 yards per carry in the 3 Bill Callahan games. Those are great numbers for Adrian. But it's Dwayne Haskins making his first ever start. So, you know, the game plan will go through Adrian for sure, but the defense knows that. Buffalo has allowed a back to score in 6 of their 7 games. So I think Adrian finds his way just through volume. I think he finds his way to a decent game here, and I've got a B grade on him. But with Haskins at the helm, the entire passing attack is on the bench, and the only guy you would have been tempted to start is Terry McLaurin. We'll talk about him. His prospects are tremendously bleak. No opposing receiver has hit 100 yards against Buffalo. Only 2 have scored all year, and he likely draws one of the toughest matchups in the NFL against Tre'Davious White, who has limited opposing passers to 45% completion percentage and the lowest passer rating of any cornerback in the league. Terry McLaurin, dead.
Does he need a nickname?
Tre'Davious White?
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably does.
The Whiteout?
The Whiteout.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh,
done.
I like it. I was on White House. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. I like the Whiteout. Tre'Davious Whiteout.
You could get White Housed. I like that too.
Oh, that is pretty good. Get White Housed. Man, well, let's work on that first. Let's workshop that. We're workshopping it on air right now.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Buffalo side where Josh Allen gets a B, entering the game with exactly 2 touchdowns in 3 straight easy games. And here comes another easy matchup. Washington allowing the 5th most passing touchdowns. Now, Washington's got one really good cornerback, Quentin Dunbar. Everybody else in the secondary, cornerback, safeties, they're all awful. Josh Norman is completely cooked. Jimmy Moreland's last name looks like the league's most literal example of what a player allows in his coverage, Moreland.
Thank you very much. There.
Yeah, that's right. Josh Allen gets a B, and so does John Brown. He's hauled in at least 5 passes in 6 of 7 games. He's averaging 76 yards per game. Those are very safe, solid, high floor numbers. Brown will most often face Redskins cornerback Josh Norman, and who has already given up 5 scores in his coverage this year. Staying with the passing game, Cole Beasley gets a C grade. He rolls into this matchup with touchdowns in back-to-back games. And again, favorable matchup here, a lineup against slot cornerback Fabian Moreau, who is allowing 87% of his passes in his coverage to be completed. He's only been credited with 1 pass breakup on the season, Fabian Moreau. So we'll start Cole Beasley if you need to. Then let's go to the running game. Frank Gore gets a B because the Skins have been obliterated by opposing running backs. They allow the most rushing attempts, the 4th most rushing yards, and Gore's still getting the lion's share of the rushing work. Very safe floor here. The last 2 teams to face the Redskins ran the ball 36 and 33 times. Gore's getting almost all the work. He's set for an easy 20 carries and probably more. Then let's talk about Devin Singletary, also startable with a C grade. He's, to this point, mostly been used as a receiver, including last week when he got targeted 6 times. Washington allows the second most receptions, seventh most receiving yards to running backs. I think his explosive play here gives him a chance to turn a short pass into a touchdown. And if Buffalo's going to run the ball 30-plus times like the last two opponents, Frank Gore's not running 30 times. So I think Devin Singletary chips in some carries as well. Everything Charge. Hey, that's me. Everything Charge. Available at fanball.com, but going to fanball.com/charge. You get instant access to my free weekly rankings, my free $1,000 weekly contest, all of our podcasts, and it's your portal to fantasy auctions. Fanball.com/charge. Coming up next, it's a segment we call Take a Chance on Me. Nine players who you wouldn't normally start, but you can this week. You're listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly returns. I'm Paul Charchian. My co-hosts are Brian Johnson and Christian Peterson. You're going to hear from them momentarily. It is time for our very, very royalty-free version of Take a Chance on Me. When these three sleeper quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers hit pay dirt, you pay us nothing. Which is the exact same amount of what we paid for this song, which is definitely positively, in a very legally binding way, not ABBA's classic Take a Chance on Me song. We begin at the quarterback position. Brian Johnson, who is your Take a Chance on Me quarterback?
All right, this isn't the boldest of calls. I usually like to try to go pretty deep, but I'm going to go Matt Stafford at Oakland. Oakland, pretty good run defense. They're essentially funneling all of the plays from the opposition to the pass.
Well, yeah.
And for that reason, they're allowing nearly 300 passing yards per game and three passing touchdowns per game. Over their last two games, they've allowed eight passing touchdowns.
Dang.
And nearly 20% of Stafford's pass attempts are 20-plus yards. That is the highest clip in the league. And Oakland has surrendered the second most 20-plus yard completions at 35. Mm. So that math adds up nicely for me, Matt Stafford.
He's my number three quarterback this week, by the way.
I was going to say, take a chance on him over every other quarterback.
Is he your number one?
He is my number one, so there we go.
Yeah, Matthew Stafford went undrafted in most fantasy leagues.
Oh, yeah.
And I went back and looked at my preseason rankings. I had him at 24. And we all thought they were going to, we believed him. We thought they were going to run the ball. But it turns out they can't run the ball, so they have to pass, and Stafford's been good.
Working out Jay Ajayi, though. Ew. News came out on Friday. Very gross. The Lions
Don't get involved. Don't get involved in that. That is not even a three tough question. That's just don't do it. All right, Christian, you're taking a chance to be quarterback.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Sam Darnold this week, not because I really like Sam Darnold's game or his seven interceptions over the last two games, but because of his opponent. This is your weekly take a chance on me cheat code at quarterback versus Dolphins. Every quarterback to face Miami has thrown at least two touchdown passes. The Dolphins allow over 260 passing yards per game, despite yielding the third fewest passing attempts. So if Case Keenum, Josh Allen, and Mason Rudolph can all toss multiple touchdown passes against Miami, so can Sam Darnold.
I mean, probably can. It takes a little guts because of how badly he's played lately, but it's Miami.
Yep.
Derek Carr has thrown multiple touchdowns. By the way, I used Derek Carr last week. Going back to the well again.
Garbage time.
He's thrown multiple touchdowns in four of the past five games and a juicy matchup against the Detroit Lions team, seeing the second most passes per game, 40. If you get that kind of volume from Carr, he remains very safe, and especially if Darius Slay can't go, their star cornerback. Without Darius Slay, that whole secondary is just garbage. Over the past 2 weeks without Slay, Kirk Cousins and Daniel Jones have combined for eight touchdowns and 660 yards. A great opportunity for Derek Carr. Let's go to the running back position. Brian.
I've got Philly's Miles Sanders at home against the Bears, who have yielded the fifth most receptions to running backs and the fourth most red zone targets to the position. Sanders has proven to be a very good pass catcher. Just look at the fact that he has more catches of 25 yards than Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, Larry Fitzgerald, Adam Thielen, Michael Thomas, Juju Smith-Schuster, and DeAndre Hopkins.
Those are first rounders right there, baby.
Yeah, and Chicago's run defense has gone south. They've allowed six rushing touchdowns to running backs over the last three. Of course, Jordan Howard in his revenge game, but Sanders will still get some work on the ground as well. So I got him as my take-home RB.
Okay. Christian.
I am sticking with this Jets-Dolphins game. I'm single-handedly making it so that people can pay attention to this game. The 0-8 Dolphins against the 1-6 or 1-7 Jets. I'm going to go with Mark Walton, running back for the Dolphins. He played 88% of the snaps last week, and that was before they traded Kenyon Drake away.
Right.
It's his backfield.
And by the way, Kalen Ballage, garbage.
He's garbage, but the only issue is he's still getting some carries at the stripe, which is super annoying. But Walton has been pretty good. He's averaging over 4 yards per carry. He's been targeted 13 times in the passing game, and that was with Drake involved. So figures to be even more involved in the passing game here. The Jets allow an average of 1 rushing touchdown per game. They've let 5 different backs catch 5 passes or more against them. We just talked about how Walton will be involved in the passing game.
Well, and Ballage actively does not want to catch.
Yeah.
If you throw passes at him, and he'll just like not even bat his arms up.
Yeah. And this is the rare game where the Dolphins may not be in desperation catch-up mode. They might be able to try to establish the run a little bit. Maybe Walton will get, 15, 16 touches here. So let's roll with them.
I'm a little bit worried. If Mark Walton's any good, they'll bench him.
That could be.
he's too good.
There's a weird spot there where if he's doing too well, sit him down.
They can't win the game. They can't trade you anymore. Now, if you're too good, they'll bench you.
It would be devastating for them to win.
It would be devastating to their chances. Their primary goal in Miami this year is to get that first pick.
For sure.
Alexander Mattison has at least 49 yards rushing in 5 games this year, including 3 of his last 4. You're back up to Dalvin Cook. And he goes up against the Chiefs. They're bottom 5 in rushing yards, receiving yards, fantasy points allowed to running backs. And get this, opponents' backup running backs have scored 4 times in the last 3 Chiefs games. This is a great opportunity. If you got to go, if you're bye week, you got to find a backup who's on the waiver wire. And by the way, Alexander Mattison probably at this point, as we're starting to look more towards handcuffing season in fantasy football, he's one of the 2 or 3 most valuable handcuffs out there. Alexander Mattison, you could pick him up and start him this week. Let's go to the receivers. Brian, who you got?
I'm going back to the point orgy in Oakland. I'm taking Detroit's Danny Amendola, who's become a big part of Detroit's offense since the running game has disappeared. Over the last 2 weeks, he has amassed 19 targets for 16 catches and 200 yards. And Oakland has allowed a 67% completion rate on slot targets for 685 yards and 5 touchdowns this season. Amendola.
Okay, I like it.
I'm going to go with a tight end here instead of a wide receiver. Cameron Brate going up against the Seahawks this week. O.J. Howard is still nursing a hamstring injury, hasn't practiced this week, is unlikely to play. That brings Brate into the crosshairs. He was targeted 6 times with Howard out of the lineup last week. Mm-hmm. He didn't do much with that, but I like the matchup here. Seattle has been killed by tight ends this year. They have allowed the 5th most receptions, the 3rd most yards to the position. In the last 4 games, opposing tight ends have averaged over 100 yards per game against them. And it's not like it's really good tight ends. It's bad ones. Gerald Everett, 136 yards. Yeah. CJ Uzoma, 66 yards. Austin Hooper, he's good, 65 and a touchdown. Ricky Seals-Jones scored a touchdown. Vance McDonald scored 2 touchdowns. Cameron Bright, tight end this week.
Just quickly related to Hooper. Somebody was asking me, doing Chicago radio this week, who's the biggest surprise of the year? And I started to think things through. It's a super chalky year. Like, the good running backs are the good running backs. Normally, every year, it's a bunch of just, out-of-the-woodwork running backs. Not this year.
Eckler, maybe.
Maybe, but Eckler's trailed off so much in the last month that I can't count Eckler. I went Austin Hooper.
Hooper is wide receiver 9 in PPR.
Yeah, he's tight end 1. He's wide receiver 9, and he went off the board on average as tight end 12. In the preseason.
Well, he had 2 good games last year. Like, 2 really good games that made it appear like he was a consistent performer, but he just, like, wet the bed in every other game. But, not the case.
I think it's his name. It feels like he's, like, the mailman or something.
Well, from Mr. Hooper from Sesame Street. Yeah. Wasn't it Sesame Street?
I think so.
I think so, too.
That's probably why.
Is he still around?
I don't know. Maybe this is his son.
Sesame Street's been on so long, there's probably been, like, 5 Mr. Hoopers.
Probably.
5 guys who've played Mr. Hooper. That's my guess. Final take a chance on me is a guy we've used before. And a guy that we are absolutely locked in on, Chris Conley. If we bother to mention his name on this show, you start him because we've nailed his 3 good outings all year, and we're calling another one here. Over the last 2 weeks, averaging 93 yards and a score, the Texans secondary has been obliterated by injury. They've surrendered a league-high 13 scores, 192 yards per game to opposing receivers, and Conley's going to end up missing two of the starting three cornerbacks. Bradley Roby is out. Lonnie Johnson is out, which is actually too bad because Lonnie Johnson might have been the worst cornerback in the NFL, worst starting cornerback. He's out in this game as well. Chris Conley sitting in potentially another in a series of good games. Let's work in one final matchup into this segment. It is Houston taking on Jacksonville. The aforementioned Chris Conley's name.
How convenient.
Yeah, if you want to start there, you can if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? And okay. you didn't even mention that Houston now has lost J.J. Watt as well.
Well, yeah, great point. There's the pass rush impacted right there.
Yeah, so Conley's in for sure, as is D.J. Chark. Targeted 12 times last week. He scored for the sixth time in 8 games. I don't need to say any more about this. DJ Chark is an easy A-level starter. That brings Gardner Minshew into play. I gave him a B. Again, Houston just lost J.J. Watt. They weren't good before they lost him, surrendering averages of 303 yards and 3.25 touchdowns per game to the last four quarterbacks they faced. Minshew was off there for a little couple of weeks, didn't play real well, and bounced back last week with that 3-touchdown performance.
So, best game of his career.
Yep, he's back in the lineup here with a B starting grade. That brings us to the running game. Leonard Fournette, I gave him an A. It's based on volume here. He still has just one touchdown. These two teams met back in week 2. He rushed for 47 yards, added another 40 through the air. Houston is actually much better against the run than they are against the pass, yielding just 74 rushing yards per game and only 2 rushing scores. So I don't love Fournette's ceiling here, but because of volume, he's a guy that you're going to put in there every week. So I gave him an A grade. If there was something between an A and a B, it would probably be that. But I'm going to give him an A.
Or a soft A?
Yeah.
That's a whole A. I just want to thank you for not speaking in Cockney, by the way, for this London game.
It is a London. I mistakenly said in Jacksonville, and it counts as a Jacksonville home game.
It's the early London game, too.
So be sure to note the early start time in that.
Yep.
Yeah. On the other side of this early start game, London game, are the Texans with Deshaun Watson. Now, this is a little weird because these two teams played in week 2, and Houston didn't do much of anything, but you can't possibly even dream of benching Deshaun Watson. He's an A-level start here, 6th in passing yards, 2nd in passing touchdowns, 3rd in rushing yards, 1st in rushing touchdowns among QBs. He's an A-level start every week.
They had Jalen Ramsey at the time. So
they did.
That's a sizable loss for the Jacksonville secondary.
Yeah, big part of the reason why they held DeAndre Hopkins to just 5 catches and 40 yards in that previous matchup. Now Hopkins has been targeted at least 12 times in 3 straight, at least 9 catches in each of those games. He is also an easy A-level starter. We are not going to roll with Kenny Stills this week after he disappointed everybody last week, just 3 catches on 5 targets against this secondary that is still pretty good. Even without Ramsey, I'm not going to go any deeper than DeAndre Hopkins, except at tight end, where Darren Fells is in the mix here. I gave him a B-level starting grade, played 90% of the snaps last week, 58 yards, 2 touchdowns, and the Jaguars have allowed some big tight end games this year. Travis Kelce went for 88 yards, Delanie Walker 64, and from out of nowhere last week, Ryan Griffin 66 yards and 2 touchdowns. So Darren Fells, I gave a B-level starting grade. Finally, the running game, Carlos Hyde. The Jaguars run defense
isn't great. By the way, that defines Carlos Hyde.
It does. I mean, he's going to get 20-plus touches. He's going to get 75 or 80 yards and a coin flip's chance at a touchdown. So I gave him a B-level starting grade.
All right.
Yuck.
That is yuck.
Meh.
Did we get Duke Johnson in there?
Duke Johnson, I have on the bench, hasn't topped 10 touches in a game. He has scored twice in the last 3 games. He did nothing in the week 2 matchup, so he's just not getting enough volume for me.
Yeah.
Didn't they give up a 3rd rounder, the Texans?
Yes,
Duke?
And then they're not using
it. It is unusual.
Well, that's when your head coach is the GM. That's what happens.
No kidding.
And you give away Jadeveon Clowney and blah, yada, yada, yada.
Did you know FanBall has daily fantasy auctions? Yes, auctions. You love auctioning in the preseason. You will love auctioning for this weekend's games. FanBall auctions, they're fast-paced, they're frantic, incredibly fun as you bid on 4 players simultaneously against your opponents. And yes, you can win money with FanBall auctions, but play FanBall auctions just because they're so much fun. Coming up next on Fantasy Football Weekly, we will break down more matchups, including Detroit taking on the Oakland Raiders. We'll tell you what to expect from Josh Jacobs in that matchup when we return. are listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Jarchi, and my co-hosts are Christian Peterson and Brian Johnson from fanball.com. You can hear us over the air on many stations around the country, and this show is also a podcast available every Friday on all major podcasting platforms, including the number one destination for podcasts, the iHeartRadio app. Guys, let's dive into a few more matchups, including Detroit taking on the Oakland Raiders. Brian, we alluded to this earlier. Detroit not able to get a running game going. I've got to believe you don't like any of the running backs, but you love the passing game here.
Oh, yeah. Let's start with Kenny Golladay, who gets a birthday grade.
His birthday
is on Sunday. His real-life birthday, baby. Birthday bonus up against Oakland, allowing the fourth most yards per game to wide receivers. And opposing number ones have blown up the box score over the last 3 weeks. DeAndre Hopkins.
Have they blown out the candles or blown up the box score?
Ooh, I wish I went with that.
All right.
Oh, well.
Just trying to help.
You did.
Yeah, the Raiders are the gift that keeps on giving on Kenny Galladay's birthday.
Yeah, they gave gifts to DeAndre Hopkins, 11 catches for 109 yards. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who was the number one receiver in that game, 133 and a touchdown. And then Allen Robinson had 7 for 97 and 2 over the last 3 weeks. So easy A for the birthday boy, Kenny Galladay. Marvin Jones gets a B. The Raiders traded starting cornerback Gerrion Conley to Houston recently, which has pushed Trayvon Conley into a starting role. Conley has seen just 9 targets so far, but has allowed 6 catches and a touchdown. So he's not very good, and he figures to be covering Marvin Jones quite a bit. So Jones gets a very safe B, and Danny Amendola, also startable, might take a chance on me, wide receiver. And even though he's been pretty frustrating, pretty brutal, TJ Hockenson going to give him a C. This is a great matchup for TJ. Oakland is ranked 29th in DVOA against tight ends. And the last 4 tight ends to face the Raiders were Darren Fells, who had 6 for 58 and 2, Jimmy Graham, 4 for 65 and 1, Trey Burton wet the bed, but that's understandable. And then Eric Ebron had 1 for 48 and a touchdown, and Jack Doyle had 4 catches for 22 yards and a touchdown in that same game. So a great matchup for TJ, and that makes Matt Stafford a very easy take a chance on me quarterback. I'm sorry I went so easy there.
That was easy.
But I would start him over anyone. Let's just put it that way. And for your daily players out there, all day, Stafford. And the running backs all on the bench. Here's the snap counts last week without Kerryon Johnson. Ty Johnson, 25. Trey Carson, 19. J.D. McKissic, 16. Paul Perkins got 6 carries.
I know.
Just avoid that whole situation entirely. And Jay Ajayi, we won't even mention that. We talked about it earlier.
Don't.
We will talk about Josh Jacobs, though, on the other side. He gets an A. Since week 5, only 4 players have accounted for a higher percentage of team touches than Josh Jacobs, who is garnering over 46% of Oakland's touches right now.
Yeah, and he's been doing it playing half hurt, too.
Yeah, and his passing work has ramped up, catching the ball at the backfield. Opposing running backs are averaging more than 29 touches per game against Detroit, who have allowed 8 total touchdowns to running backs over their last 4. So a smash spot for Jacobs here. Probably another smash spot for Darren Waller as well. He gets an A. Detroit is allowing more than 60 yards per game to tight ends, and they've allowed tight end touchdowns in back-to-back games to Evan Ingram and Kyle Rudolph. Tyrell Williams gets a B because all he does is score touchdowns if he's healthy. He's healthy this week. We mentioned Darius Slay in an earlier segment. Pretty questionable with a hamstring injury to play in this one. So Williams would get an A if Slay's out, but still a B even if Slay goes. Detroit has surrendered 5 scores to wide receivers over their last 3 games, and if Slay is to sit, that would lead to another start for Rashawn Melvin, who only allowed a hat trick in his coverage last week. 3 touchdowns allowed by Rashawn Melvin. So great spot for Tyrell Williams. And pretty good spot for Hunter Renfrow. I'm going to give him a C. Hunter runs primarily out of the slot, and Detroit has been vulnerable covering the seams. Larry Fitzgerald had 8 for 113 and a touchdown. Keenan Allen, 8 for 98. Golden Tate, 8 for 85. Nelson Aguilar, 8 for 50 and 2. And even B.C. Johnson, 4 for 40 and 1 against the Lions. And that is why Derek Carr was your take a chance on me quarterback charge.
Yes, he was. Vikings taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. Dalvin Cook sitting out potentially huge game if trends continue here. Kansas City has allowed the opponent's starting running back to amass at least 130 combo yards in all 4 of their home games. They've given up the 3rd most rushing yards, the 2nd most receiving yards to running backs, and the 4th most fantasy points to backs. And here come the Vikings with arguably the most potent rushing attack in the NFL. So, Dalvin Cook, a lock A. And as I mentioned in Take a Chance on Me, Alexander Mattison, as a deep reach, is a plausible sleeper as well. We go to the passing game. Kirk Cousins comes in with a B here. He enters the game as the NFL's hottest quarterback. Aaron Rodgers just threw for 300 yards and 3 scores against the Chiefs, but it did take some Hall of Fame level passing for Rodgers to get there. And prior to that, the Chiefs secondary was dramatically improved, averaging just 250 yards and 1.1 passing touchdowns. That's it. Now, part of it was because teams just run on the Chiefs and run successfully. If there is more balance, there is some upside here. Also, it looks like Frank Clark, their star defensive lineman, will not go in this one. And when Kirk Cousins has time, he is usually pretty good. Adam Thielen expected to play. He injured his hamstring 2 games ago. He is technically questionable. Everybody assumed he'd be like 100%. But after limited practice all week, we're not 100% sure he's going to go, and you'll want to watch him up to game time. He had found the paint in 3 consecutive weeks prior to that. 75 yards and or a touchdown in 6 of 7 games this year. And Chiefs slot cornerback Kendall Fuller missed last week and is questionable for this one as well. And if Fuller can't go, that would set him up against 6th-round rookie Rashad Fenton, who got forced into action last week and allowed a touchdown. And Thielen would get an upgrade if that were the case. Stephon Diggs has over 100 yards in 4 of his last 5 games and a franchise record 452 yards over the last 3 games. Over the last 4 weeks, the Chiefs are allowing just 112 yards per game to opposing receivers. They haven't allowed a receiver to find the end zone. Bashaud Breeland is questionable for this game as well. A lot of Chiefs injuries. He's questionable, and he would be with a cornerback who would get a lot of play on Diggs. And if he can't go, upgrade Diggs to an A here as well. Let's go to the Kansas City side. Travis Kelce is an obvious A, opposing tight ends averaging a healthy 9.5 targets per game against the Vikings. Although the Vikings have not allowed a touchdown to a tight end yet, but big games in terms of receptions and yards to Austin Hooper, Darren Waller, Evan Ingram all fared well against Minnesota. Travis Kelce is obviously an elite play no matter who the quarterback is. And let's go to the quarterback position, where if it's Patrick Mahomes, you'd see it's an A start because it's Patrick Mahomes. And the Vikings secondary has had a variety of problems over the course of this year. Now, if Mahomes doesn't have his mobility, he's playing with a brace on his knee. He's not going to do these things where he's running at a full speed on one direction and then throws a laser 40 yards downfield the other side of the field. I don't think that stuff's in play here, but I still think he would be an A grade player. Mahomes would be if he goes. That said, I don't think he goes. Let's talk about Matt Moore, who gets a B as the probable starter. The only quarterbacks who have failed to throw multiple touchdowns against Minnesota: Daniel Jones in like his second NFL start or third NFL start, Chase Daniel in a backup role, and then the combo platter of Case Keenum and Dwayne Haskins. Everybody else has thrown multiple touchdowns. All other quarterbacks are averaging 285 yards and 2.4 touchdowns. We'd take 285 and 2.4 out of Matt Moore. That would be a solid day, and that's why he gets a B here. He does not have the downfield slinging ability that Patrick Mahomes has. But Tyreek Hill still remains an A grade regardless of the quarterback. He plays from all over the field, has strong matchups at every spot. From the slot, Hill has a huge speed advantage over Mike Hughes and or Mackenzie Alexander. Trey Waynes has got straight line speed to hang with Tyreek, but not the moves. And the Vikings are allowing the 3rd most receptions to wide receivers, the 3rd most touchdowns to wide receivers. Continue to start Tyreek Hill. Sammy Watkins gets a C grade, even though he's been completely and totally unreliable this year. But the Vikings secondary is just unusually yielding, and I think he's startable here. And Watkins had been playing the slot with Tyreek Hill out. Now I think he goes outside, and that puts him up against slumping cornerback Xavier Rhodes, who's allowing 85% of the passes in his coverage to be completed, and a passer rating of 125 in Xavier Rhodes' coverage.
I think I have a new nickname for Xavier. Xavier Rogue.
Rogue?
He's gone rogue. Because he's just running around the field, not covering anybody.
What about roads open? Roads are open. It's open for business on his side of the field. I'm going to put Mecole Hardman and Damian Williams on the bench. For Hardman, just 8 snaps on offense last week with Tyreek Hill back. So if that's all the usage he's going to get, I can't count on him. Damian Williams, by the way, as we shift over to the running game, who scored last week, but the usage incredibly low. He hasn't topped 9 rushes since the opener, just 1 catch per game over the last 3 weeks. LeSean McCoy, though, gets a C grade. Vikings near the top in almost every running back defensive metric. They've only allowed a single rushing touchdown this year, and one back has topped 100 rushing yards. Aaron Jones, both of those, both the touchdown and the 100-yard game. They're giving up just 79 rushing yards per game. I think McCoy probably needs a goal line carry here for fantasy relevance, but I am giving him a C start anyway due to the overall potency of the Kansas City offense. Christian, Chicago takes on Philadelphia. The Chicago offense has been a wreck here, and they finally got back to David Montgomery, who we're going to talk a lot more about in a few minutes. But tough matchup for David Montgomery against a good Eagles run defense.
Yeah, it is. Although Philadelphia's run defense, they're top five run D. They allow just 69 rushing yards per game. It's partly because teams can just pass all over them. Mm-hmm. The one team that committed to it was the Cowboys, and Ezekiel Elliott turned 28 touches into 147 yards and a touchdown. So will they commit to David Montgomery again this week? They sure did last week. 31 touches, played 74% of the snaps. If they do that, I think Montgomery can get some work done here. But I'm not sure they will. So just a B-level starter here.
Okay.
The passing game, I've got a bunch of bench grades. You cannot start Mitchell Trubisky. Shut out of the end zone in four of his six starts. He's on pace for 13 touchdowns this whole season. Obviously, he, sad Trombonski, is out of your lineup despite the nice matchup here. He's doing just enough to keep Allen Robinson relevant here. Robinson has reached 60 yards in all but one game. He has three touchdowns in his last three games. The Philadelphia secondary has allowed the fourth most wide receiver yards, the second most wide receiver touchdowns, including six 100-yard games.
Allen Robinson getting half of the wide receiver targets just going to him.
That's right. So I've got a B grade on him just because I can't trust Trubisky, but he certainly is in your lineup. And there's not enough here for Taylor Gabriel or Anthony Miller, although I will note that Miller is becoming more involved. 19 targets and 183 yards in his last three games. So keep an eye on that if Trubisky can manage to turn things around here in the unlikely event that he can. On the Eagles side, kind of much of the same here. I've got the passing game mostly on the bench. The Bears' defense remains elite against the pass. They've allowed just seven passing touchdowns in seven games. Three of the last four quarterbacks they've faced were scoreless. Carson Wentz has just not done enough to deserve being in your lineup. Held under 200 yards with one touchdown in three of his last four. So don't force him into your lineup. He's on the bench. Alshon Jeffrey, just a C here. He hasn't topped 76 yards all year. Just 11 targets in the last 2 weeks. Chicago has given up some big games, over 100 yards by Stephon Diggs and Michael Thomas in the last couple of weeks, but we just haven't seen that type of upside from Jeffrey, so just a C-level starting.
Man, he looks slow.
Yeah. But it's a revenge game. I know you're probably going to get to that soon. Also one for Trey Burton, by the way, who you got on the bench.
Yeah, true.
This revenge game is riddled with revenge.
Riddled with revenge.
Trey Burton hasn't topped 20 yards this season. I'll take my chances with him on the bench. Nelson Agholor and DeSean Jackson are both on your bench. Jackson may actually return this week for the first time since week two, but given his questionable injury status, I'm not going to throw him in there in his first game back. I have both Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert on the bench here. Ertz, just one touchdown, hasn't topped 72 yards all year. Season lows in targets over the last 2 weeks. He went six targets and then four touchdowns. While Goddard has scored in both of those games, so I don't know if the torch is being passed here or what's happening, but Chicago is too good against tight ends. They haven't allowed a tight end touchdown since week one. No opposing tight end has topped even 47 yards. So with Ertz and Goddard splitting the looks here, I've got them both on the bench. And now we get to the running game where we have a revenge game of sorts for Jordan Howard.
It's not of sorts. It's a straight-up revenge game.
It's a straight-up revenge game.
Yeah.
And Chicago has been just crushed by running backs recently. They've allowed 123 yards and two touchdowns to Josh Jacobs, then 119 and two to Latavius Murray, then two touchdowns to Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler. Howard had coming off a season-high 23 carries last week. He figures to be a focal point. I've got a B-level starting grade on him. And Miles Sanders, we talked about how the Bears are vulnerable against pass-receiving running backs. Brian's take a chance on me running back. I've got a C grade on Miles Sanders.
I have to. This is so close to the double bonus for Jordan Howard. Tomorrow is his birthday.
Oh,
we almost had the birthday.
So Saturday's
revenge.
His birthday. One day from the birthday revenge game.
Yeah, but don't go out drinking, Jordan. You got a big game on Sunday.
Apparently not. Cam Newton is going to see a foot specialist, which you think is something he would have done a long time ago. But now he's going to see a foot specialist, and it's really cast some doubt on the remaining of his season. Christian, you are the official Cam Newton apologist desk around here. Tell me, in 30 seconds or so, the dynasty value that Cam Newton has as we start to look forward to 2020.
So, yeah.
And maybe, by the way, the Bears starting quarterback in 2020. Who knows?
Well, yeah, I guess it could depend on if he winds up somewhere else. But yeah. Over the last two years ago, he was the number two fantasy quarterback. Last year, despite battling through injury on a points per game basis, he was the number seven guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not dumping him outright in Dynasty. I'm holding him.
You're holding him. Yep. You're gonna burn that roster spot. Yeah, they haven't IR'd him, which is
frustrating. That's the biggest trouble, is burning the spot.
Absolutely. Coming up next, let's answer three tough questions. You can play along. Try to go a perfect 3-0 on Fantasy Football Weekly. It's Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchi and fanball.com. My panel of experts today, Christian Peterson, Brian Johnson. Boys, I've got an especially difficult set of tough questions. They're extra tough. Listeners, you can play along. See if you can go 3-0. We like to begin with
tough question number one.
Was last week's game the turnaround game for David Montgomery's season? We begin with Brian Johnson.
I'm going to say it was. And, you know, it wasn't like someone else was getting the work over David Montgomery all year long. Montgomery had totaled 98 carries. Mike Davis and Tariq Cohen have combined for 40 all season. So it's always been, Montgomery's always been the guy, but Chicago's just never been running the ball. They're top eight in passing play percentage, top five over the last 3 weeks, but that's clearly not working for them. They have to rely on their defense and the run game if they're going to have any chance of making the playoffs this year. Their quarterbacks suck. Their schedule does not suck moving forward, though, for running backs. According to Fantasy Pros, the Bears have the third easiest remaining schedule for running backs. You know Mike Davis and Tariq Cohen aren't a threat to steal his carries, so I think this is a turnaround for Montgomery, and the buy low window is probably closed, but I'm saying he's turning it around.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, as you probably heard in the matchup that I did with the Bears, I'm not totally convinced that the Bears are going to suddenly start committing to him the way that they should. I mean, it looked like they were going to do that in week four when they gave him 24 touches, and then in the next two games, he got 15 touches combined. So I'm not totally convinced that they're sold that this is the way that they're going to win games. I agree that I think it is with the running game and the defense. I just don't know if Matt Nagy agrees with that. But, Brian, you mentioned it. The schedule is really favorable here. This week is pretty tough against Philadelphia, but he gets Detroit twice by Thanksgiving. They're bottom five against the run. Really no stoppers on the schedule. And then in the fantasy playoffs, Green Bay, sixth worst against running backs, and Kansas City, fourth worst against the running backs. So he has a very favorable schedule here. So I say from a fantasy perspective, yes, this is the turnaround for David Montgomery.
If Eddie Pinheiro just made his damn kick, I'd feel a lot better about Matt Nagy learning a valuable lesson
that
here.
You can win a game this way.
Yeah, that's right. You can go win games with a run, especially a David Montgomery spearheading your running game. And unfortunately, we don't really know that for sure, but I still want to believe that they go back and look at the tape and agree that maybe the best thing that's happened to them offensively all year was this game by David Montgomery. For Matt Nagy, God, you don't have to be the smartest guy in the room all the time. You don't have to like overthink every single thing and always be contrarian offensive guy. Sometimes everything is as obvious as it looks. Sad Trombonski is not the path to victory. It's all about, and Brian has said it well, elite defense and running game. San Francisco 49ers are undefeated. The Vikings are 6-2. It's not complicated. That's all you need. I want to believe Matt Nagy is not so bullheaded and or dumb that he can't figure that out. We will go with yes. Last week's game will mark the turnaround for David Montgomery.
Tough question number two.
Should fantasy owners add new Seahawks wide receiver Josh Gordon or stay away? Christian?
So if this question was worded slightly differently, I would say to stay away. If you said, is he going to be a fantasy starter the rest of the year? I think the answer is no.
Then why roster him?
Well, because there is upside. We've seen his upside over the years, right? Over the last couple of years playing with the Patriots, he's had a couple big games here and there, and we know that he's talented. He gets added to a Seahawks roster where he's almost certainly number two in the pecking order behind Tyler Lockett, but at the same time, Tyler Lockett plays in the slot. They do have DK Metcalf, who's basically just an end zone presence. And they don't really have a tight end after Will Disley went down. They don't have anybody to throw to there. So they do kind of need a pass catcher. And I just think the upside is certainly enough for me to add him to the end of my roster just to see what happens.
Okay. Yes.
I'm probably going to stay away. The only, you know, wide receiver traded midseason that's done well that I can remember has been Amari Cooper. And that's because he had a massive upgrade going from Derek Carr to Dak Prescott. Going from Tom Brady to Russell Wilson is pretty much a lateral move. It's certainly not a upgrade or a down, you know what I'm saying here. But in the schedule, pretty tough. You'd want him against the Bucks this week, but there's no way he's going to know the plays.
No,
he's not
way.
Playing. 49ers next week, that's a bench. Eagles is a good matchup. That might be the one game you want to start him. But then Vikings, you know, they're sort of a neutral matchup. But then the Rams, who just required Jalen Ramsey. The Panthers have emerging duo of cornerbacks. I just don't see him learning the plays well enough for the remainder of the season. So I'm just staying entirely away.
What's legal in Washington State that you can think of?
That's a good point.
I'm just going to throw that in there.
Danger.
Hey, it's legal in Boston, too. Maybe that's why he got good.
The average game for Josh Gordon over the last 2 years, the average game for 2 years of Tom Brady passing, 3 catches, 57 yards, and 0.25 touchdowns. That's it with Tom Brady. So let me give you a comparable from this season. Who else is 3 catches, 57 yards, and 0.25 touchdowns this year? It's Curtis Samuel, who's dropped in half of leagues and not a regular starter. Curtis Samuel's wide receiver 43. So to tell you what 3 catches, 57 yards, and 0.25 touchdowns gets you, it gets you to wide receiver 43 by fantasy points per game. There are still people reliving Josh Gordon's 2013 season. Allow me to give you a very distinct way of understanding how long ago that was. This is 2019. 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13. 7 years ago was the last time Josh Gordon was particularly good. I don't know that he's better than Jerron Brown. I can't tell you that. No, you are going to stay away from Josh Gordon. I don't, by the way, he's got to go like learn a whole new playbook and learn all that.
That's problematic.
Scholar of the game?
Yeah.
Josh Gordon? I don't think so.
Tough question number 3.
To this point, Melvin Gordon has been so ineffective, it would have been better if his fantasy owners, if he had just continued his holdout, honestly. For the season, though, going forward, will he be an RB1, an RB2, a flex, or a bench-level player? Melvin Gordon. We begin with Brian Johnson.
All right, the schedule moving forward starting on Sunday, Green Bay, Oakland, Kansas City, Denver, Jacksonville, Minnesota, Oakland again. And there's a bye mixed in there, so that's clearly a 0 point week for Gordon, and really just two good matchups, one being Green Bay on Sunday, but I'm not fully confident Gordon's up to bell cow status yet. And then Kansas City's another favorable matchup. But outside of those, he's a flex player at best, and the Chargers have just gotten very bad. And so bad, they've been forced to pass nearly 70% of the time over their last 3 games. They're 3rd in pass play percentage overall in the season. Austin Eckler, clearly a threat to the passing work for Gordon. So I'm just saying flex, and that's barely a grade I want to give him. Close to bench, but flex.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say he's going to be on the bench. I just don't see how he ever bites off enough of those looks to become fantasy relevant. I mean, he's been horrible, 2.55 yards per carry since ending his holdout. The Chargers have lost 3 of his 4 games. Mm-hmm. At some point, I think they're going to figure out that they need to stop feeding him the ball and give it back to Eckler a little bit more, who's been the much more superior runner. So maybe there's a matchup or two here, but I think as the season goes on, the time split is going to skew more and more towards Eckler, so I've got Gordon on the bench the rest of the way.
That's a great point. It was something in my notes as well, that sooner or later you'd think that they get desperate enough that they just stop this whole Melvin Gordon experiment and just go to Eckler.
They're not bringing Eckler's him back better. Next year.
They're not right? bringing him back next year, and that was why I think they were running him into the ground. Yeah. You know, what do they care if they run him into the ground and he's going to go be a free agent? But sooner or later, they got to win games. Now, offensive line should get a little better with Russell Okung returning. But every time he tries to return, he gets hurt again. So, you know, we need him to get back and get healthy. That would help a ton. The loss of Ken Wisenhunt can only help. That's addition by subtraction. His offense ranked 28th in rushing yards and 28th in rushing touchdowns. That's probably helps this offense. I think that works in his favor. You guys, I think, hit the schedule just about right. Couple of good spots in there. Couple of bad spots in there. It doesn't do a lot for me for Melvin Gordon. I've got a flex level grade on him. They're going to be in these easy matchups. I still think he's going to be the goal line guy and he'll be playable in those easy matchups. And in the rest of them, you're probably going to bench him, but there's enough there where he's going to get flex. He's going to be a B grade and a C grade a few times and a bench grade a few times, and it'll net out to a flex level play for Melvin Gordon. Let's work in one more matchup into this segment. Cleveland taking on the Denver Broncos. Brian, the Cleveland passing attack has just been an utter wreck so far, and now they get a tough matchup against a good secondary in Denver.
Yeah, let's start with Odell Beckham, who's on pace for 78 catches, 1,100 yards, which is decent, but not the numbers you're expecting. But 2.3 touchdowns is the pace he's on. Mm. Emmanuel Sanders had two touchdowns on Thursday night, and he and Jimmy Garoppolo didn't even know each other's name before the game started.
Well, I think his name was Babe.
But Beckham just been brutal, and this is not a spot for him to bounce back. Opposing wide receiver units are averaging just 9 catches for 111 yards. That's all of the wide receivers on the team per game. And number ones have been blanked. From a touchdown perspective, A-Rob, Devontae Adams, DJ Chark, Keenan Allen, T.Y. Hilton failed to score against Denver, and Beckham probably will too. So just a C for him. He'll be shadowed by Chris Harris all game, and Harris just, you know, eliminates you from the box
score. Yeah, pretty much. It's over.
Jarvis Landry, I'll give him a C as well. Should see plenty of Duke Dawson, who mans the slot if Harris does not. Dawson was a second-round pick of the Patriots last year, but went on IR and then was traded in the offseason. He's only seen 6 targets in coverage, so we don't really know what we have there.
Right.
But I'll give Landry a C.
He's uber green, though.
Yeah, definitely. So Landry will get a C. That's because Beckham's going to be blanked by Harris. The tight ends, I actually wanted to suggest one. Over the last 3 weeks, opposing tight ends are averaging 6 catches for 69 yards. Demetrius Harris scored last week for Cleveland, but he played the fewest amount of snaps. Ricky Seals-Jones played 29 snaps, and Pharaoh Brown played 26. So it's a three-headed monster.
Gross.
So the tight ends are on the bench. And to the running backs, Nick Chubb gets a B. Worth noting, this is his last game before the return of Kareem Hunt. The last solo game before Kareem Hunt is eligible to play.
Yeah.
Not a great matchup for Chubb at all, even though the Broncos have yielded the eighth most rushing attempts to opposing backs. Everyone outside of Leonard Fournette, who had a monster game against Denver, has struggled mightily. Take out the Fournette game, the Broncos are allowing a measly 3 yards per carry, and no back has topped 85 yards. Read that wrong. And then who are we at? Over to the Denver side. Getting my notes in order here. Let's start with the running backs, Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman, and give them both a B.
I want this to be a huge game for Lindsay.
Yeah, I know.
It could be.
Freeman is out snapping him.
I know.
But Lindsay's out touching
mm-hmm. Freeman.
It's a pretty good spot for both. Denver is going to want to run the ball with Brandon Allen at quarterback. We'll talk about him in a second. Actually, I'm just going to say bench when I mention him again. But they're going to want to run the rock. Cleveland probably going to struggle to keep their offense on the field. The Browns are yielding a healthy 25 carries per game to running backs, 4.7 yards per carry. So Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman, both very startable with a B. Cortland Sutton, just going to give him a C, sadly, because of the Brandon Allen factor. He has provided a safe floor all season with at least 60 yards in 7 of 8 games. But again, Brandon Allen,
first ever start for bench and Allen. I don't love it.
I don't know. But Sutton's like he's a wide receiver. He's the top 12 wide receiver.
He was.
It's not like Joe Flacco is good either. Brandon Allen could be
Denzel
better.
Ward, Greedy Williams.
Yeah, Greedy Williams comes back, which puts Cleveland secondary at full strength for the first time all year. I'm still going to give him a C, though, Church. I can't fault anyone for looking elsewhere if you have better options. But if you don't, you can start Sutton. Deshaun Hamilton, do not start him. He's on the bench. In his first game without Manny Sanders, everyone thought, Hamilton's going to do something.
No.
45 of 73 snaps, 0 catches on 1 target.
Yeah, disaster.
So he's dead to us. We'll never mention him on this show for the rest of the season, I'm sure.
All right, works.
And Noah Fant, in his first game without Manny Sanders, he set a season high in snaps, 82%, slot snaps, 14, targets, a team high 8, and catches with 5. But the only tight ends to produce against Cleveland were a healthy Delanie Walker in week 1, and then George Kittle and Mark Andrews. Noah Fant isn't even in the same universe as those guys yet.
Not yet.
Probably never will be. But I am going to give him a C in the wasteland if you're super desperate, but I don't know. More now, bench. He's on the bench, and so is Brandon Allen. He and Brandon Allen can hang out on the bench.
I kind of like bench and Allen. Does that work for you guys?
Bench and Allen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brandon.
How about Brandon
Allen? All right, I kind of like that better. Brandon Allen. Yeah. It doesn't roll off the tongue as easily, but it punctuates the point I think we need here a little bit better. You know, every week you can play the Crush Charts Championship for free at fanball.com. When you assemble a better salary cap team than mine, you get a shot at this week's prize pool of $1,000. But more importantly, when you do beat me, That's how you get an entry into our Week 17 championship game where you battle for the $10,000 prize pool. Go to fanball.com/charge. Again, it's all free. We're back in moments with more matchups, the things you need to know to set your lineup, including Green Bay taking on the LA Chargers. We know to start Aaron Jones. What about Jamal Williams? What happens if Devontae Adams comes back? We'll tell you when we return. Weekly returns. We're diving back into the matchups. But first, did you know you can play Super Flex Salary Cap at fanball.com? If you love starting two quarterbacks, go to fanball.com. Play our Super Flex Salary Cap DFS. Green Bay takes on the Chargers. Aaron Jones at this point has become an obvious A. Although the only thing I'm going to mention on him is that his reception pace is just unsustainable the way they've used him here. And with Devontae Adams likely returning, I think it's going to drop off a bit here. But he's still an obvious A. And then we go to Aaron Jones, who's vaulted into the NFL MVP conversation. Any doubts about his greatness have been eliminated over the last 2 weeks, during which he's scored 9 touchdowns and thrown 0 picks. Chargers pass defense looks good on paper, but man, they face some crappy quarterbacking. The only two quarterbacks they faced who are remotely close to Rodgers, Matthew Stafford, Deshaun Watson, averaged 298 yards and 2.5 touchdowns. I think that feels very comfortable for Aaron Rodgers here, especially if Devontae Adams comes back. By the way, A grade for Aaron Rodgers, if I didn't say that explicitly. Devontae Adams gets a B, assuming he plays, we will note there's some small chance of a setback here, but generally Turf Toe doesn't have the setback. A lot of times it's a pain management thing. So, yeah. Well,
on Friday, there was video of him at practice leapfrogging his coach.
Yeah, right.
Like, with ease.
Okay.
I think he's good.
It's a lot of time. The turf toe is really about cutting and planting. And those are big things for receivers. And you can leap your coach without cutting or planting. So, you know, I think he goes here. He will draw Casey Hayward, very good corner, who shadows opposing top receivers. But the weird thing is, even though Casey Hayward's good, he goes after the top receivers usually end up with good games. T.Y. Hilton, 2 touchdowns. Kenny Golladay, 100 yards, touchdown. DeAndre Hopkins, 6 catches, 67 yards. Cortland Sutton, 92 yards and a touchdown. They were all able to get it done against the Chargers secondary. So I think Devontae Adams finds his way to a good game here. The other receivers, though, Marquez, Valdes-Scantling, Geronimo Allison, Jake Kumerow, Alan Lazard, I think they neutralize each other. Sure, one of those guys probably does something, but they're all sharing playing time, and none of them are getting consistent targets. They're not getting consistent snaps, so they're all on the bench. The only other receiver to mention here is tight end Jimmy Graham, who's having a better season than expected. And the Chargers appear tough on paper against tight ends, but the opposition has been completely uninspiring, especially at the tight end position. So this is maybe one of the better tight ends they've seen. The Tennessee tight ends totaled 90 yards against Los Angeles recently, and the Houston tight ends combined for 100 yards and 3 touchdowns against them in Week 3. So I think Jimmy Graham's a C-level start. Jamal Williams is the only other Packer player that I probably ought to touch on and haven't yet. He scored a short receiving touchdown in 3 straight games. He has scored a receiving touchdown, and for the last 5, he hadn't scored a receiving touchdown in the 20 previous games, however, so it feels a little bit unsustainable. Williams has been seeing the field on roughly 50% of the offensive snaps. I think you can give him a start here against a wobbly run defense. I've got a C grade on Jamal Williams. Let's flip over to the Chargers side. I know Melvin Gordon's been a disaster, and we just talked about him a lot not that long ago, but this is a really good opportunity for him. This is one of the handful of games where we talked about him getting B grades. This is one of them. It's a Packers defense that's giving up the 11th most rushing attempts, 6th most yards per game, and 4.9 yards per carry. It all trends to a bigger Melvin Gordon game here, unless they've just had it with him, which is a possibility. The Packers have also given up 100 or more rushing yards and or a touchdown to the lead back in every game since the opener. So I think Melvin Gordon gets it done here.
It's not a homecoming, but Melvin Gordon hailing from Kenosha, Wisconsin.
That's a good point. Played his college ball at Wisconsin. As for the backup, Austin Eckler, averaging just 4 rushes since Gordon's return, which is completely deflating. He's basically James White now, Eckler is. So you only get what he gives you through the air. And since the opener, the Packers are allowing opposing running backs to manage just 4 catches for 33 yards, combined all of them through the air. That's nothing. Only one has scored a receiving touchdown against the Packers, so I've got Eckler with just a C grade here. And I should give him a bench grade. I really should. But I love Austin Eckler.
Did you see the video?
Good.
The video of him doing one-arm pull-ups while reading
God.
A book?
Unbelievable. Man, Austin Eckler's so good. So on talent alone, I don't have the heart to put him on the bench. Let's go to the passing
Is
game.
Is that more difficult to do while reading a book?
I bet.
I think
it seems tough enough as it is, right? The book reading seems totally irrelevant.
What else could he be doing with that one hand while doing the sit-ups or the pull-ups? That would make it harder.
I don't know. Juggling?
Yeah, that'd be harder.
Yeah.
Video games?
There you go.
Harder.
If he turned the page with the arm he was using to do the pull-ups quickly and then grab it again, then that's something.
Philip Rivers goes up against a Packers defense that's allowed multiple passing touchdowns in 4 of the past 5 games. And here's Rivers, who's somehow managed to cobble together solid fantasy numbers in 5 different games, despite all the injuries, the offensive line in tatters. You know, I worry about Rivers' protection breaking down against Preston and Za'Darius Smith, who have combined for 15 sacks and 72 pressures between them per Pro Football Focus. Dang, that's a lot. So a B grade on Philip Rivers here. A C grade on Rivers. A C grade on Keenan Allen, who has not eclipsed 61 yards in any of his last 5 games. That is a serious drop-off from a guy who was averaging 136 yards in his first 3 games of the season. He goes up against Packers slot cornerback Tre'Mon Williams, who surrendered 11 scoreless yards per game over the last 3 weeks. That's it. No slot receiver has scored against the Packers this year. So just a C grade on Keenan Allen as well. Mike Williams is on the bench. He has yet to score, which is troubling for a touchdown-dependent receiver like him. And the Packers secondary has yielded just 5 scores to receivers. That's the 5th fewest in the league. So Mike Williams also on the bench. The Jets take on the Miami Dolphins. You've already identified, Christian, many take-a-chance-on-me-level sleepers in this game.
Several, yeah.
One guy that fantasy owners desperately need to get right is Le'Veon Bell, and this is the best opportunity of his season.
You're right. I mean, if he can't get it done here, we might be talking about Le'Veon Bell as a sabotage drop candidate.
Well, not for the fact that he plays Miami again later, I think.
Maybe.
So there's that. You might want to hold him for that, but that might be it.
He's been so bad. Just 8 carries, 23 yards last week. That may have been the low point of a stunningly disappointing season, but faces a Dolphins run defense that's allowed the most rushing attempts in the NFL, the most rushing yards in the NFL. They've given up 5 100-yard runners, 10 running back touchdowns. This is it for Le'Veon Bell owners. This is your A-level start.
Right.
Again, if he can't get it done here, there's not much hope for the rest of the season. The passing game, I talked about Sam Darnold. He was my take-a-chance-on-me quarterback against a secondary, giving up over 250 yards and 2 touchdowns per game. That brings both Jamison Crowder and Robbie Anderson into play. The Dolphins lead the NFL in wide receiver touchdowns allowed with 13, including 7 to the slot receiver position.
Oh, there we go.
So Jamison Crowder had that huge week one, that 17 target week one. He's been virtually invisible since then, just 5 targets in each of the last 2 games. So it's a big roll of the dice here, but the matchup sure favors Crowder. I gave him a C-level start. Same with Robbie Anderson. He's been targeted 22 times in the 3 starts since Darnold returned to the field. And he's the primary beneficiary of the Dolphins shutting down star corner Xavien Howard due to injury, in air quotes.
Yes.
Now he gets to face backup Ken Webster, who's ranked 117th among cornerbacks by Pro Football Focus.
I got to believe they don't even rank many more than 117.
I don't think they do. Yeah. Anderson is he's the boom or bust guy, right? He's the deep threat, so you're depending on a touchdown here. So again, just a C-level grade here. Even Demaryius Thomas, he's been targeted 18 times in the last 3 games, had 5 catches for 63 yards last week, so not all of these guys are going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, but one of them is, and two of them might.
Yeah.
So Thomas could even be a dart throw. We're not quite there yet on Chris Herndon. It looks like he's unlikely to play this week, still with that hamstring injury.
Right.
He's on the bench. So that brings us to the other side of the matchup. We talked about the running game. I've got Mark Walton in as my take a chance on me running back. The passing game. Church, Stewbeard. We haven't seen vintage Stewbeard. Well, averaged less than 200 yards per game, tossed just 5 touchdown passes in the 4 games in which he's seen extensive time. Now, I would argue that that is vintage Stewbeard. That's exactly what we should expect. I know you would have a different opinion about that.
What I love about Stewbeard, Ryan Fitzpatrick, is he just throws deep ball after deep ball, regardless of getting interceptions, whatever. It just all it takes is one hookup, and the Jets are capable of giving it up. So I'm not advocating going out and starting Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if he cobbles together a couple of touchdown passes in
this
game.
I mean, Gardner Minshew did have 3 touchdowns against the Jets last week, but before that, they had only allowed one opposing quarterback to throw more than one touchdown pass, so they haven't been horrible against the pass. And honestly, Fitzpatrick is always at risk of an in-game benching.
That is true.
You know, he might be out by the end of the first quarter. At wide receiver, Devontae Parker and Preston Williams. These guys are tough to analyze because they're both pretty similar. They're okay, but not great. Neither has topped 6 catches for 82 yards all season. Parker has scored in 3 of his last 4. He ranks 14th in the NFL in air yards, so if I was going to start one of them, he would be the guy, except that he has a tougher cornerback matchup against Trumaine Johnson. Preston Williams draws Daryl Roberts on the other side. So the cornerback matchup favors Williams. C-level starting grade on both of them.
I don't
love it. And Mike Gesicki at tight end, he's not doing anything. Jets have allowed the 4th fewest yards to opposing tight ends.
He's not even owned by anybody.
No.
In my dynasty league, I've had stashed all year Preston Williams. And he's eaten up a roster spot. And this isn't easy, but I'm looking towards next year when the Dolphins will have the first or the second overall pick, and they're going to draft a quarterback, and whoever that young kid is probably going to be pretty good, and that guy will be looking at Preston Williams as I think his long-term combo.
I think he's been good enough in his rookie year that you want to hold him looking forward to next year.
I think so.
Assuming you're in rebuild mode and you don't need the roster spot to compete now.
No, see, I do.
Oh, okay.
But that's a different story. It's been a little bit painful to hold Preston Williams, but I think it's important to do it. Our final topics are ahead. We got one more matchup. We've got one more matchup to work in. Dallas taking on the New York Giants. Brian, the Giants have got arguably the worst starting 3 cornerbacks in the NFL. You've got to love every part of the Dallas passing game here.
Yeah, these teams met in week 1. Let's talk about the receivers for Dallas real quick. Amari Cooper, easy A, 6 for 106 and 1 in week 1. Since then, the Giants have probably faced 2 true comparable receivers to Cooper, and those were Mike Evans and Kenny Galladay, who only combined for 14 catches, 313 yards, and 5 touchdowns.
Wow.
Those two guys. Easy A for Cooper. Easy A for Gallup, who had 7 for 158 in week 1. The Giants have allowed the most completions of 20-plus yards at 36. If you bench Gallup, you should probably quit playing fantasy football. He gets an A. Randall Cobb even gets a starting grade. He's healthy. He gets a C. Slot receivers against New York.
Oh, they're killing him.
Danny Amendola, 8 for 95. Edelman, 9 for 113. Adam Thielen had 7 for 130 and 2. Cole Beasley had 4 for 83. And, Randall Cobb had 4 for 69 and 1 in week 1 as well. So, starting Randall Cobb with the C. I'm benching Jason Witten, though. Witten has scored in 3 straight games against the Giants dating back to 2017. He did score a touchdown in week 1, but that is the last game the Giants surrendered a tight end touchdown, and no lone tight end has topped 3 catches against them all season, so I'm benching Witten this week. And Dak Prescott, obvious A, and so is Zeke. The Cowboys will get left tackle Tyron Smith and right tackle Lyle Collins back, which is huge.
Mm.
Zeke only had 13 carries for 53 yards in the opener, but he did score, which means he's topped 100 rushing yards or hit pay dirt in every game he's played against the Giants. But shockingly, he hasn't done both in the same game, 100 and a touchdown against the Giants.
Okay.
But it's probably going to happen this week, even though the Giants traded for defensive tackle Leonard Williams. No one really cares about that, though. They're just getting shredded by any running back who doesn't play for Detroit or Washington.
Remember when they gave up Snacks Harrison for free, basically? Yeah. I think they got a 5th round pick for one of the best run-stuffing D-tackles in the the league.
One of the many reasons I've abandoned ship as a Giants fan. Saquon
Barkley. And which team did you go to?
The Bengals, but whatever.
How many games
I'm still,
they won?
I'm still happier being a Bengals fan.
Yeah. Is that a lateral move? Is that an upgrade? Is that a...
I had to go to a barren landscape. I can't, you know, just jump on a successful bandwagon. I got to go on that's on fire and sinking at the same time. Anyway, over to the Giants side, Saquon Barkley. I'm going to give him an A in PPR, but a B in standard leagues. Dallas is allowing the fourth most receptions per game to running backs at 6.7, and Barkley is averaging 7 targets and 5 catches in his 4 full games this year. The Cowboys are very tough on the ground, though. Only 2 lone backs have received more than 14 carries this year, and Saquon Barkley wasn't one of those running backs in week 1, but he did top 100 yards on 11 carries, so you're starting Saquon Barkley regardless. Sterling Shepard will play. He has cleared concussion protocol. He logged just 6-for-42 in the opener, ran primarily out of the slot, which just convolutes things because Golden Tate wasn't playing then. He was suspended.
Right,
now,
right.
He's a slot receiver.
I know. That it is. It is. It's messy.
I'll give them both a C. Dallas has surrendered just 3 wide receiver touchdowns, and the receivers that have done well have been burner boundary receivers. That is not Sterling Shepard or Golden Tate.
No.
But they'll probably be playing from behind, and I'll give them both a soft C. Darius Slayton, who had 2 touchdowns last week, is on the bench now that Sterling Shepard has returned. Evan Engram, though, easy A. Opposing tight ends are averaging more than 60 yards per game against the Cowboys. Went off against Dallas in week 1, catching 11 balls for 116 yards. He scored in every career game against the Cowboys, but I'm benching Danny Dimes in this one. Even though Eli Manning managed to top 300 yards and throw a touchdown against Dallas in week 1, Dallas was missing some key members on their defense due to injury or suspension. That's not the case this week. Dallas has allowed 1 or 0 touchdown passes in 5 of 6 games. And outside of cake matchups against Tampa Bay and Detroit, Danny Dimes is averaging 198 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1.75 interceptions per game. 5 of 6 games outside of the Giants game, I should have said.
Yeah. Got it. That was a comprehensive breakdown of the Giants right there. An otherwise somewhat mundane offense. Our final topics are ahead. We provide you with 3 guys we believe will be hot waiver wire pickups next week. But you're going to grab them this week because that's it. The Time Machine. Yes, it is premature speculation happening next. Whether you are ready for it or not, Fantasy Football Weekly coming up next. Segment of Fantasy Football Weekly. Remember, all my player rankings are available for free at fanball.com/charch. And you can play against me for free for your share of the $1,000 prize pool in the Crush Charch Championship. Guys, it's time for premature speculation, maybe the most popular segment on Fantasy Football Weekly. Each of our hosts are going to give you a player we believe will be a hot waiver wire pickup next week, but blammo, already on your team because of that little time machine sound effect right there. You will already have him. Brian, who is your premature speculation player this week?
Well, the hotness might be dumbed down a little bit since the acquisition of Josh Gordon by the Seahawks, but I have their now starting tight end Jacob Hollister as my premature speculation. You actually stream him this week against Tampa Bay, but including this week's game against Tampa Bay, 4 of Seattle's next 7 opponents are top 6 in yards allowed to tight ends, and they've combined to surrender 16 touchdowns to the position. So you have Tampa Bay this week, Minnesota in week 12, the Rams in week 14, and the piece de la resistance... the Cardinals in week 16,
oh,
baby.
Oh, everybody wants that Cardinals tight end
and
matchup.
You know, Josh Gordon muddies the waters a little bit probably, but more than half of your league is desperate for tight ends on a weekly basis, and Hollister's got some pretty prime matchups in about half of his matchups, so Jacob Hollister.
I like it.
That's deep. I like
that
it, too.
That is deep. That's a deep call.
I'm going to go with running back Darius Geis here. Of course, we haven't seen him since week 1 when I think it was a meniscus injury in the knee.
Yep.
That's not put him on IR, but he is eligible to come off of IR, and it looks like, or it sounds like, he's going to suit up in week 11 after the Redskins' week 10 bye. 4 of his final 6 opponents rank in the bottom 12 against opposing running backs, and more importantly, the Redskins have absolutely nothing to gain by continuing to hand the ball to Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
They've got to see what they have in Geist. We're almost 2 years into this experiment here. They need to know.
They need to know if they can count on him. They got to go draft somebody. Yeah, right.
And so you're going to hear a lot about this next week when they're actually on their bye.
Mm-hmm.
Go grab them now before everybody else realizes it.
Speaking of a guy who's returning, Kareem Hunt's ownership at the draft, at coming out of drafts, was 100%. You know where it is now? 9 weeks later, it's down to almost 50%.
Wow.
Because, you know, through attrition, right? You need that roster spot. Yep. Bye weeks are coming. You're tired of getting a zero out of that roster spot. Half of the people out there have dropped Kareem Hunt outright. He's coming back. And he's already practicing with the team. You're going to hear this story next week about him coming back for eligibility next week, but you're already going to have Kareem Hunt. Now, he will make his debut against Buffalo. That's coming up next week. Buffalo, you can't pass on him. You got to run. Now, some people will tell you that Kareem Hunt is nothing more than a product of a great Andy Reid offense, and he's really not good. Yeah, that's a bunch of BS. Tell that to Damian Williams and his 2 yards per carry in an Andy Reid offense. Kareem Hunt is a very good player. Now, Nick Chubb has been a workhorse, and he's been great, and I'm not taking anything away from him. But Hunt's too good to ride Pine. They are going to work him into this offense. And, you know, Chubb can't keep going at this pace. Probably they're going to want to have more of an even split. And Kareem Hunt is an awfully good player. So,
would you rather have Hunt or Geis?
Hunt, because I know Hunt's really good. Yeah. And he's not coming off injury. He's hitting the.
But he's in a timeshare, too.
I know he's in a time.
It's a tough call for me.
Here's the thing. Sure, he's splitting time with Nick Chubb. I would contend that Geis is splitting time with Dwayne Haskins in that Haskins is so bad.
Yeah, the Redskins are pretty awful.
I think Haskins is going to be a total grade A bust based on what we've seen so far, which is very small. I think that's the case. Let's jump back into some matchups. We've just got two left. New England takes on Baltimore on Sunday night. Let's start with Tom Brady. And despite the Patriots' undefeated record, Brady's passing has been pretty pedestrian. His completion percentage is at its lowest point in 5 years. He's averaging 1.6 touchdown passes per game. And here comes a Ravens secondary that's been pretty good. Only Patrick Mahomes has thrown multiple touchdowns against them. They get cornerback Jimmy Smith back. Brady's only truly reliable receiver is Julian Edelman, and he's got a very tough matchup. In fact, let's go to him. Brady gets a B, so does Edelman, with just a B here. He faces exceptional slot corner Brandon Carr. Not only has Carr surrendered fewer than 44 yards in four straight games, Brandon Carr has given up one touchdown in his coverage in 2 years. Julian Edelman is tied for the lead with 13 red zone targets. We like that part. Brady's connected with him on 77% of those red zone targets. We like that. And he's converted four of those targets into touchdowns. Let's hope for a touchdown here for Edelman, who gets a B grade. Sticking with the receivers, Mohamed Sanu is on the bench. He played two-thirds of his snaps from the slot last week, his first game as a Patriot, and that puts him behind Julian Edelman for slot work. I don't think he's on the field enough to matter here, unfortunately. And Philip Dorsett also on the bench. He runs almost entirely from the outside, where he faces a tough matchup with either Marlon Humphrey on one side or a much improved Marcus Peters on the other side. I don't love Dorsett here. I've got a bench grade on him as well. Let's go to the running backs. Sonny Walkman, just to see, the Baltimore Ravens allow the third fewest rushing attempts, the fifth fewest rushing yards per game to opposing backs. Since being obliterated by Nick Chubb in week four, the Ravens have limited far more talented backs than Sonny Walkman. James Conner, Joe Mixon, Chris Carson averaging 43 rushing yards per game. That is it. That's the absolute max for Sony Michel, I think, his ceiling. Michel, totally touchdown dependent. He only gives what his offensive line gives him, and this is a tough matchup. Speaking of tough matchups, James White, I almost gave him a bench grade here. The Ravens allow the fifth fewest receptions and the seventh fewest receiving yards to opposing backs. They've only allowed a single back to have more than three receptions. It's only out of just respect for James White and how much they use him that he maintains a C grade in this game. Let's flip it over and go to the Baltimore side, where we start with Lamar Jackson. Now, we all remember Lamar Jackson's epic week one against Miami. Kind of since then, it's been a slow degrade in his passing performances over the course of the year. His completion percentage has dropped in four consecutive games. He's thrown one touchdown in his last three games. Meanwhile, the Patriots have somehow allowed two passing touchdowns on the entire season. a staggering level of success no matter the competition. And you might say to yourself, well, I don't need Lamar Jackson to pass. He will run me to fantasy victory. Well, New England's giving up 10 quarterback rushing yards per game. 10. I've got a B grade on Lamar Jackson because anything can happen, but I can't say I like him in this matchup at all. His primary receiver, wide receiver, is Marquise Brown. He gave us fool's gold in week one and has been limited by an injury ever since. He is back for this game, however, and will play. He's averaged just 3 catches per game since week two, and his targets have dropped in every week since week two. You know, hopefully he's healthy and ready for a second half of the season resurgence for Marquise Brown. But I don't think it happens this week against a ridiculously good Patriots secondary that's yielded a league-low 1 score to wide receivers on the season. That brings us to Mark Andrews, the only other part of the receiving game that you might play. He's been held to under 45 yards in 4 of the past 5 games. He's slumping as well. I told you Jackson is slumping. So is his best receiver, Mark Andrews. There's no positive angles I've got here for Mark Andrews. Although the one other touchdown the Patriots have yielded is to a tight end. So 50% of Patriots' touchdowns going to tight ends.
It's not a silver lining, not a bronze lining. No. I don't even got to keep going down the periodic table of
zinc. Copper. Zinc. Is it zinc lining, maybe? I don't know. For Mark Andrews, a C grade on Andrews. Lastly, Mark Ingram with a B grade. He's been great, but the Patriots are the only team to allow a touchdown, only team not to allow a touchdown to a running back, and they're also allowing the second fewest rushing attempts and the third fewest rushing yards per game. Here is your silver lining. Le'Veon Bell and Nick Chubb over the past 2 weeks, 5.5 yards per carry against the Patriots. So I think you are going to see a lot of Mark Ingram here. I wouldn't be surprised for a decent game, and he gets a B grade. Let's go to our final matchup of today's show, and that's Tampa Bay taking on Seattle. Christian, for Jameis Winston, it's been all over the board with highs and lows. What do you think about Jameis Winston in the passing game against Seattle?
I've got a pretty high grade on him here. First of all, this game has the highest over-under total of the week at 52.5. There's going to be some points scored here. Secondly, Seattle just allowed 460 yards to Matt Schaub last week. They also allowed 395 yards to Jared Goff earlier in the year and 418 to Andy Dalton. None of those guys are any good either. Mm-hmm. So I've got Winston as a B-level grade. He has topped 300 yards 4 times in his last 5 games. I mean, there's a danger that he throws 2 interceptions in the first quarter and he ends up on the bench. Yep. So, well. But the matchup is great here. That, of course, brings Mike Evans and Chris Godwin into play, both as A-level starters. The Seahawks are bottom 5 against wide receivers. They've allowed the 6th most receptions, the 3rd most yards, and touchdowns to opposing wideouts. So you don't need me to tell you that Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are in your lineup as A-level starters.
I will mention this about Evans.
Yeah.
Seattle's got these super physical, big cornerbacks, and that's so much of Mike Evans' games, just out-muscling these slappy cornerbacks around. That might not happen here, and I like Godwin over Evans because of that angle.
Okay.
All right.
I can dig it. Tight end, Cameron Brait was my take-a-chance-on-me tight end, so he's in your lineup as well. I gave him a B-level start. Both running backs are on the bench. Neither one is doing anything. Neither Ronald Jones nor Peyton Barber has topped 35 rushing yards in 3 weeks. They are both on the bench. So let's go to the Seahawks side, where we've got all sorts of starters here. Russell Wilson is an easy A. Now, the Bucs' pass defense is really bad. They've allowed 300 yards, an average of 300 yards and 2 touchdown passes per game, which is even worse when you consider who they've faced. Jimmy Garoppolo, Cam Newton, Daniel Jones, Jared Goff, Teddy Bridgewater, Kyle Allen, Ryan Tannehill. These guys aren't any good. Imagine what a good passer will do. Wilson's an A. Tyler Lockett, his top receiver, is an A. The Bucs have allowed 6 wide receiver touchdowns in their last 3 games. DK Metcalf, you could start him in desperation.
Yeah, I don't even think it's desperation.
Well, only because he hasn't caught more than 4 passes in a game all year, hasn't topped 69 yards since week one, but he leads the NFL in end zone targets, had 2 touchdowns last week. So he's an all or nothing touchdown guy. Let's go to the running game here, which is a little tricky with Chris Carson. Tampa Bay has easily the league's best run defense. They allow just 56 yards per game. Held Christian McCaffrey to 37 yards and 31 yards in 2 games. Todd Gurley to 16. Alvin Kamara to 62. Seattle just lost their starting center to IR, so that doesn't bode well for Chris Carson, but they're probably going to be up big on the clock. They'll be in clock killing mode. Carson's going to get his 20 plus touches, and we've seen what he can do with that. So a B level starting grade on Carson.
Yeah, I was tempted to make him more like a C guy.
I know,
out of respect
is,
for the Tampa.
It's
Tampa
a really
defense.
Bad matchup.
It's a really bad matchup, yeah. And I worry that offense is going to flow through Russell Wilson and his arm.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you love the show, please go to fanball.com/charge for my free player rankings, where you can get more detail on all of these players, and also my free $1,000 weekly contest. Our frantic auctions are there at Fanball as well. And many thanks to everybody who takes the time to rank and review the show on your podcasting platform of choice. Always grateful for your feedback. Everybody, have a great week 9. We'll talk to you next week on Fantasy Football Weekly. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.